Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. It is Friday, May 1st, 2015, just seconds after 2:30 UTC as we're recording this. I'm Sam Minter and Yvonne Bo is with us. Hello, Yvonne.
How?
How?
Isn't that like, I don't know. I thought I saw it in a TV program. That's how they said hi. In some program. Of course, I can't remember what language you were talking about.
Okay.
But anyway, something.
Anyway, we do have a show today. We're going to talk about Baltimore. We're going to talk about some tech earnings, including, of course, Apple, but we might touch on a couple other tech companies that put out earnings recently. Twitter was also in the news for theirs because they screwed up the announcement. And
We can talk about that. They didn't do it. Somebody else did. But anyway, their announcement was screwed up. But anyway.
And then there was at least one. I don't know. Anyway, there was other stuff going on, too. And then we'll have a lightning round. We once again have a situation where we didn't feel like there were three big topics. So we'll do two and then we'll do a lightning round and we'll see where we go from there. I did want to start before we get into that. I just wanted to mention, those of you who, follow my blog or Twitter or Facebook, already know, but, our family dog Roscoe passed away a few days ago. So it's been a rough week around here. For details, go to my blog at abelsmay.com. I did a post on April 30th that said kind of what happened and a whole bunch of pictures and videos and stuff like that. But sad day. He was an old dog, so, you know, we knew that he didn't have that much longer to go, but he wasn't obviously sick or something until a few hours before the end, which I guess is better that way than sort of a long lingering thing where you have to make a decision.
Yeah,
but still very sad.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, I've had to go through that, so I know the feeling.
Yeah. This isn't our first time. I guess for my son, Alex, it's the first time, but you know, I've lost pets before numerous occasions, I guess, but it's been a long time since the last one. So about probably 10 or 11 years since the last, that's not quite true. Probably nine. But anyway, we've lost pets before. It's one of the things about having pets, you know, with the exception of some people who have very long-lived parrots or tortoises or something as pets that live longer than humans, the normal experience of...
Parrots live longer than humans? Really?
Some. There are some species of parrots and such that have not much longer, but like... Yeah, they have 80, 90-year lifespan.
Well, yeah, sometimes. I mean, you're used to pets, like, doing 15 years, you know what I'm saying? 10, 15, some, you know.
That's only some breeds with appropriate care, blah, blah, blah. And I guess the thing is, it doesn't have to be 80 years. I could be wrong about that, but there's certainly some that are long enough. You know, once you get to pets that are living longer than, let's say, 30 years... 40 years, you have to start thinking about what happens if they live longer than you do. If you are towards the tail end of your own life expectancy. But you know, yeah, you have to think about that. With cats, dogs, hamsters, all of the sort of normal,
leaving the trust fund, I guess. I don't know. Jeez.
Yeah. But with all of the sort of normal pets, you know, part of the experience is they don't live as long as we do. And yeah. So you get them and you see them age before your eyes and then they're gone. And I guess it's part of life, but still always sad.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough of me being maudlin about that. If I talk any more about it, I'll start breaking down.
Yeah, I know. He's going to start crying. So I feel for you, buddy, but you know, I don't want to make you.
So. Yeah. We got our 5 minutes done for the intro. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about Baltimore. We'll be back after this. Hey, you, listeners. We know you have thoughts about the stuff we say here on Curmudgeon's Corner. You probably think we're completely wrong about many things. Or perhaps you want to tell us that we're geniuses. That's always great. Or perhaps you just want to suggest a topic for us to talk about. All of these things are wonderful. We love to hear from you. So talk to us. If you prefer email, just email Sam That's me, your prime curmudgeon, at Abulsme at Abulsme.com. That's spelled A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Or tweet at us. I'm at Abulsme, and Yvonne is at I-M-B-O. That's I-M-B-O-U. And while we may not do it every time, don't be surprised if we respond to you right here on the show during an upcoming episode. Thanks, everybody. We'll be looking for your email and tweets, so get right on that. Okay, we're back, Baltimore. Now, I'm going to admit up front that because of what I just talked about in the last segment, I have not been as tuned in to current events this last week, or specifically last 3 or 4 days, than I otherwise would have been. I've sort of had the general knowledge of what's going on, but not the details. My level of understanding is that a guy died in police custody a few weeks ago. The police were not very responsive on exactly what happened. We got to the guy's funeral. We got to the police finally saying something.
And there have been protests during the week before even the funeral. There have been a whole bunch of protests.
And there were peaceful protests for a while. Yes. And then things happened.
The funeral, the day of the funeral happened, everything just exploded.
So tell me more, because, you know, like I said, I'm not as tuned in. Give me the fun. What's the 3-minute summary of everything I should know about what's going on in Baltimore?
Well, I think that two things. Number one, there had been ongoing protests, and they had been growing in size ever since the event happened. Okay, look, the guy that died was no saint. Okay, all right. Let's take that away. The guy had a rap sheet longer than my roll of paper towels. Okay, all right. So that's not it.
Which doesn't necessarily matter.
Doesn't mean anything. Yeah. But it's just, you know, it's just in the context of who the person is. Okay, all right. That got arrested. Okay, so it wasn't like whatever the reason. But the reality is, look, they arrested this guy. He obviously he was not hurt the way that he was hurt when he was arrested. He was critically hurt during his transport. Apparently his spine was severed. Okay, all right. So obviously he took a very nasty hit. Mm-hmm. And apparently even after that happened, they didn't like go and take him urgently to get medical attention. Okay.
Did I hear correctly that he went without treatment for days?
I don't know if it was days. I don't think it lasted that long. I think he died relatively quickly.
Okay.
I didn't think it was days, and I could be wrong. Okay, all right. But I know the reality is that he was arrested and he was not given medical care. Okay, right. Even though it was probably pretty obvious that he must have been seriously injured. Okay. Right. He died. An investigation started, and I think that they were very not forthcoming about details about what happened. People were agitating for those details. They kept not being forthcoming. There was a lot of peaceful protests going on in the city, and, you know, still not much progress on it. The funeral happened. And, you know, some people just decided to protest a lot more loudly in a lot of ways that a lot of people, even a lot of blacks in Baltimore, found unacceptable. But I think that there was just a lot of anger just building up over the fact that the response that would have been expected wasn't there. There was two things that I heard. Number one was that all those peaceful protests going on, and I will admit that I didn't realize that there were that many protests going on after that just happened, that nobody noticed them until the violence exploded.
Right.
Number one. The general media was giving zero coverage whatsoever to that. They had talked about the fact that the incident happened, but they sure as heck were not covering that there was a lot of protests. The second thing that some people mentioned is the fact that recently we had that incident, I think it was in North Charleston, South Carolina, if I remember correctly, where, hey, when there was evidence that a cop did some wrongdoing, the police department immediately terminated the individual and basically, you know, didn't give him any slack.
But I will say, even in that situation, though, it was interesting that before it came to light that there was video of the event, the cops were completely circling the wagon and doing the story that, you know, he tried to get my taser, blah, blah, blah. And then the video came out. And then I will say, once the video came out, they apparently did the right thing. But there was no feeling of, you know, before the video came out, it was just sort of like whatever the cop said must have been true.
Right. But the thing is that I think that what they said was, given the evidence at the moment, there was a swift action in terms of like taking care of the situation. In Baltimore, I think that the people have continued to present that there is evidence at this point that these officers at the minimum should be terminated at this point, but well, nothing's happened.
Even like in the investigation, apparently, I'm looking at some headlines here. I haven't read the details, but the investigation apparently says that he may have been trying to intentionally injure himself. He broke his own spine.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I know that is so common. Really, really.
Yeah.
Really, really. Who the fuck does that?
You know, I've just been arrested. How am I going to react to this? I'm gonna break my own spine.
Not.
You know, and look, honestly, I mean, I don't know the details of the situation. You know, maybe he was psychotic. Maybe he didn't do what he was doing. Maybe whatever. Maybe he was under the influence of things. I don't know. Maybe he could have been self-destructive, but I haven't seen. But one of the things here with this process.
The guy's trying to hurt. Okay, that's fine. That's the guy trying to hurt himself. What about after the guy hurt himself? How about getting him medical treatment?
Right. And with all of this, though, like the questions are, you know, I mean, like we had in Ferguson, by the way, which I don't think we've mentioned after the fact, like when the Justice Department report finally came out, one of the things that it said is, actually, guys, it looks like the cop's account was pretty right. And the reports of him putting his hands up and everything else seem to come essentially from the one guy who was with him, and there's nothing backing it up, the physical evidence, whatever, and it perhaps was completely justified. But they made their situation worse, and I think Baltimore has been making their situation worse by the way that they handled the situation from beginning to end. Like, in terms of the appearance of cover-up, the appearance of protecting the police at all costs, the once there are protesters in place, treating the protesters like the enemy. And then, okay, once we got, like, protesters looting and setting things on fire, and okay, then things do shift a little bit. I mean, you can't quite completely ignore that. But at the same time, it got to that point because of how, you know, that was being handled before that. Now, of course, you can say, and I completely agree, if somebody's looting, the person with ultimate responsibility for that is the looter. However, come on, let's not be blind either. You're setting up the situation to invite that sort of thing.
Yeah, but I just, look, I think that there is, there's been so many incidents that have been caught on video over the last, you know, numerous months that have shown that in a substantial number of these incidents, the cop story about what happened, even if it was Ferguson one, maybe not the case.
Yep.
Is bullshit. Okay. Right.
And look, this is the thing that's changing. I mean, we're getting a lot more media attention here, but not because these incidents are somehow more common than they were before.
No, it's because of the video.
It's because now, yeah, everybody's got a freaking smartphone, and, you know, they whip it out and start taking video when something happens. And now there's evidence that didn't exist before. So when some of these things happen, where, you know, it's not just, you know, the cop's word against the dead guy they just shot.
Right.
Or even the guy who they just beat up or whatever.
Right.
As you said, in some of these cases, the people have been actually completely and totally innocent.
Right.
But in many of these cases, the people being abused, shot, hurt, killed, whatever, aren't saints, but that doesn't matter because
doesn't justify killing them.
It doesn't justify killing them. It doesn't justify abusing them. It doesn't justify brutality. It doesn't justify planting evidence. It doesn't justify all sorts of things because our system is fundamentally based on the notion of being fair to everybody. And I understand sort of the psychological things where, if you're a beat cop and all the time you're interacting with bad guys, then suddenly you start assuming everybody who looks like them might be a bad guy too. And you start generalizing and all kinds of things. But our entire system and our processes should be set up to combat those type of psychological prejudices. And I use the word prejudices not just in a racial way, but certainly including race as a factor, because there are all kinds of cognitive biases that lead to results that aren't what you would really want if you were able to look at the situation more calmly and rationally. And it seems like rather than fight those things, things have built up to sort of feed into them. And the whole culture of, the thin blue line or whatever they call it, police protecting each other at all costs. I think that's a fundamental problem that has to be broken down. And I don't know how exactly, but we have to have a culture where if a police officer sees another police officer getting out of line, they don't cover it up. They don't protect them. They report it or even arrest their colleague on the spot. I gotta be honest,
the way that's gonna end is by everybody fucking having a camera on them and having to record what the fuck they're doing while they're on the job. I don't really see any other way out of it. I mean, because I understand the pressure that one person has about not speaking badly about somebody else that they work with, okay, yeah. All right, or getting them into trouble. I mean, that's not something that just happens as a police officer. That's something that happens everything. In general. Yeah. Okay.
Friends, but, family, colleagues, all sure. of the above. It's very hard to like.
It's very hard to go and like freaking like throw that guy under the bus.
Right.
Even if he did something wrong. But, if they've got cameras on him, you know what? There is no such thing happening anymore. The person's off the hook. It is what it is.
Yeah. I don't know. And
you know, it reminds me of the guy. Listen, and it's coming. Look, the other day I was at a park, and for the first time, I bumped into somebody wearing Google Glass. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
I thought it was creepy. I got to be honest with you. I hadn't bumped into somebody with a Google. I don't know if you have bumped into somebody with Google
Glass. I've noticed there's at least one Facebook friend of mine who had it and posted a few things from it, but I've never bumped into one in person.
So I bumped into this guy wearing it in person, and I got to be honest with you. I thought it was creepy. I mean, I really did. But the reality is that for police work, it's gonna be the rule.
Well, and even for that guy, if you and him got into a fight, he's got evidence.
Right. Shit. Right.
Or, you were on the street trying to defraud him in some way.
Yes.
He's got it. He's got the goods. Yep.
Yeah, he's got the goods.
Yeah, I don't know. Cameras solve part of the problem, but a lot of these things, you've also, even in the absence of cameras, I mean, cities have to like start figuring out how to deal with this in a smarter way in advance. Because look, we know there are all kinds of problems with all sorts of people on the police force and how they treat people. It's in every big city, in lots of small cities. It is going to happen. So come on, guys, figure this out in advance, what you're going to do. And what you're going to do should not be cover everything the hell up and try to make it look as good as possible for you. Every major city at this point should have a rapid response plan for how they're going to jump on these situations aggressively and investigate and potentially go after, any officers who step over the line. I mean, and there should be a communication strategy in place so that you're not saying nothing for 2 weeks while you're doing an initial investigation or something like that, that just lets the pressure build up. You have to be in front of these things.
It's part of that communication, but it also has to go back to, and a number of people have talked about this, it's also about the training of the law enforcement officers in terms of how to deal with these types of situations. Because, look, they are all in very difficult situations. I actually saw a video of something the opposite happening to a police officer where he had a body cam, for example, and he recorded this. He went to arrest a guy. He's going – well, not arrest a guy. He went to question him regarding an incident. So forth and so on. He walks out with a guy. He's questioning a guy. You know, he said, hey, do you have a weapon or something? Whatever. All of a sudden, the guy pulls out a gun and fucking killed him.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. It's caught on video. So I understand that the job that they're in is a very difficult job. Okay. It's a dangerous job. No question about it. But I also think that the problem is that police officers and I was reading this about a cop in Georgia that got thrown in jail a couple of years ago that had this huge history of abuse.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And it was recorded on and going. And, you know, it seemed like, And it's just nothing was done about it. Nothing was done. So something needs to be done. There is enough knowledge, information, and technology for some changes to be done. And departments, you know, I think that right now, because of the pressure happening to this, I know a lot of departments are looking at making changes to how they handle these situations.
There are a number of things that are clear reforms that are needed in terms of, you know, who you even hire in the first place. There should be screening against violent tendencies of various sorts that's repeated, because those tendencies can grow depending on what you're exposed to as an officer.
Right.
There should be screenings around bias, like, and not just conscious bias, but unconscious bias. And so I'm not talking a quiz that says, you know, do you think it's okay to arrest more black people than white people? Because everybody's going to say no. But
are you kidding? Hell yeah, arrest them all.
Screw yeah, but no. there are all kinds of tests you can do that, you know, sort of look for subconscious bias of various sorts.
Puerto Ricans need to go first, but anyway.
And people should be tested on those kinds of things, and people should go through simulations where, you know, regular training on sort of de-escalation. I think that's one of the things that is seems to be missing the most in a lot of these scenarios. Are the police are actually escalating scenarios rather than de-escalating them. And
yes.
And one of the yes. things you should, you know, and our time's up, but we're wrapping up, is, you know, you should never read one of these stories where what you see is the police were escalating the situation. The police's right. job in these kinds of things is to
take control and bring it back down.
Yes. And, you know, in some cases, the right way to do that is to let the guy go and then try to catch him later.
Which is like, for example, the whole thing about there was a big incident in North Charleston. I mean, dude, you had the guy's car. You knew who the hell he was. He ran. He was not – you knew – whatever he had, you knew he didn't have any violent crimes in his record. Why are you going out and chasing this guy like that? You could go to his house and freaking catch him like a few minutes later. You tow his car. You go to his house. You're running. Hey, buddy, how are you? You're under arrest.
There's also a key sense of proportionality there as well. I mean, you mentioned that case. In that case, I believe what he was wanted for was being behind on child support. And okay, he should pay his damn child support. But that's not a run after him and shoot him type of offense. You know, like if someone's sitting on the street, you know, and he's selling pot, okay, that's not something to shoot him over, even if he runs. You know, the cases where you want to potentially shoot him is he's got a gun, he's threatening people, he's clearly violent, he's probably going to shoot somebody else in the next 60 seconds if you don't shoot him. Okay, then, okay, I can understand. You need to stop that guy. But the guy who's you're going after for something nonviolent and he decides to run? No. And you know, frankly, even if he's unarmed and he's coming for you, okay, you need to defend yourself. You need to do something. But it's not necessarily proportional, you know, to shoot the guy who's just coming after you with his fists. You know?
Well, you know, one of the problems is, of course, that a police officer actually carries a gun, that if a guy is going over and like trying to,
I know. He could take the gun, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly. So,
I'll repeat my statement that I know you disagree with. I think a lot of police officers who are armed today don't actually need to be.
I do agree with you on that. I don't disagree with that. I think that a lot of the police officers out there at most, they should be carrying stun guns. And that actual like weapons like that for the most part should be carried like for special you know, operations and stuff like that. Yeah. I don't really think that most of them need actual guns.
Or, yeah, and I mean, what I was suggesting didn't even go as far as what you said. I just said most officers, the gun should live in the back of their car for them to get when they need them, you know, or right. something like that. Because, you know, if you know you're going into a dangerous situation, that's a completely different scenario. But for the regular cop on a regular beat, he probably shouldn't have his gun on him at all times. Because it's more likely to escalate the situation than it is to de-escalate the situation. And chances are high it won't be needed. Now, again, if you're going into a scenario where you have a strong feeling in advance that there is going to be a problem, there are going to be armed people here, it's going to be a hostile environment, okay, maybe that's the situation where you bring out the guns. But, like, in your regular everyday traffic stop, probably not.
Well,
and like you said, every once in a while, the guy that you're pulling over for speeding pulls out a gun and shoots
you. Absolutely.
But you know, it's a small enough percentage of the time that they probably don't need to be armed all the time to guard against that one in many, many hundreds of thousands occurrence.
Yes. By the way, and so for those of you know, when I make the joke crack about Puerto Ricans, if you don't know, I'm Puerto Rican. Okay, so anyway, all right. Okay.
And apparently there's that old rule that you always have permission to, like, joke about your own ethnic group.
Absolutely, yes.
But if anybody else said it...
Yeah, go fuck themselves. Anyway, all right.
Okay, we're taking a break. We'll be back. We'll talk tech earnings for the next segment. Back after this.
This is a break, oh yes, this is a break. This is a break, cause no one gave me any suggestions. I told you, I warned you, so this is a break. This is a wonderful break, a wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes, this is a break. Break, 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 break. Yes, this is a break. Yes, this is a break. Break, 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 break. Yes, it is a break. And now the break is over.
Okay, we're back. So we had Apple and Twitter and, I don't know, LinkedIn or something, didn't they go out too or something? I don't know. There were a bunch of these that came out this week.
Well, there was a bunch because it's that time.
It's that time of the year.
Yeah.
Of the quarter.
I mean, but I guess, the eventful ones really, well, Apple obviously, you know, reported like ridiculous earnings again, you know, made like, I don't know, $13 billion in profit.
But iPad sales are down, Yvonne.
Yeah, I know. They're a little bit down. I know. They're really struggling over there to try to get any product out. A number of people have mentioned this, and I actually happen to agree that I think part of the reason why iPad sales are down is just simply because the larger iPhones are taking some of those sales.
I think you've got two factors. I think you definitely have the larger iPhones. I mean, my wife has an iPhone 6 Plus now, and I think it has clearly diminished her need or want for any sort of tablet. We had never gotten her the iPad. She does have a Kindle Fire tablet, but most of the time she's using her phone.
That's a tablet.
What?
Where?
Anyway.
But
most of the time she's using her phone, and it's enough for her, and the tablet's not too particularly appealing. So that's definitely part of it. The other part is update cycles, that are proving to be longer. I know you replaced your original iPad with a more recent one a while ago.
Well, yes. It had lasted about 4 years.
Right. And mine is also, it's getting up there, but I mean, I've had this iPad, I believe, longer than I've had my current phone. Maybe about the same. But I mean, I'm thinking about upgrading the phone, like, frankly, any month now, because it's really showing its age. I'm not thinking about upgrading the iPad right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just, our first iPad lasted 4 years, so they do last a lot longer. I mean, it's just the way that we use them.
Yeah, and as someone pointed out, you know, they've added all kinds of things to, it's faster, it's lighter, the battery's longer, it's got all of these features, it's got the thumbprint thing, it's got all of this stuff. But if 99% of your use of your iPad you know, is Facebook and a couple games that aren't really pushing it too hard because, you know, you're playing Words with Friends or something, not some first-person shooter, then you're set. It does
well, yeah, I know, but I will look. But I will say this: one of the advantages of us migrating to the new iPad Air instead of our old iPad is that, for example, we have Microsoft Office on the new iPad, and it works pretty well. Okay, we use it all the time, and we on the old iPad it wouldn't work. Simple as that.
I mean, eventually you get an app that needs new hardware. But for, you know, a lot of people, if their primary use case is a little bit of email, a little bit of Facebook, they're
set. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what the old iPad was perfect for, and that's why we hadn't replaced it.
Right.
So, I mean,
beyond that, okay, iPad sales are down a little bit, and we understand why, we think. But they did really well yet again. Like, yes. This is not the, I mean, last quarter we were talking about this too.
They did really well again, and they have, right now, they're closing in on $200 billion in cash, which somebody pointed out was like, I don't know, I think if you took like the next, like, I think it was like 13, you know, you could take like 13 of the companies in the top 20 of the NASDAQ, of the S&P 500, and that cash is more, you could buy them all with that cash, some crazy amount like that. I don't know. It's just,
I think someone pointed out too that, for instance, the entertainment industry isn't as big as people think in terms of the movie studios and record labels and stuff. And, you know, if it wasn't for antitrust things, Apple could basically buy the whole industry if they felt like it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. They could buy them all. Buy the whole thing up. Yep. Apple just, you know, entertainment industry. Yeah, we own it. All of it. Basically. Yeah. We decided to buy it all. Sure. Why not?
I mentioned half jokingly in the in the prediction show that I was predicting that they would buy Tesla. You know, people keep talking about things like that as well. I know you poo-pooed that, and I wasn't entirely serious about it. But there are all kinds of things that
That Google came very close to buying Tesla.
Yes, I read that too.
Yeah, you know, and apparently. Somebody that you know launched a rocket this week that looked somewhat like a penis.
You know, all rockets do.
No. This one...
I understand. Okay, look.
this one...
Anyway, back...
Really?
That's really? Nice, Yvonne. Anyway... yes, there are several billion. I find it actually very interesting and very fun, actually. There are now at least three billionaires with space programs.
Right. Right.
It's just like, we got lots of money. We don't know what to do with it. Let's have a space program.
I have my own space program. Right. You know?
But anyway, so Apple's doing great. Blah, blah, blah. Everybody is always looking at the downside here, but they keep beating expectations.
At this point, there is none other than this whole thing that they were talking about, the Apple Watch being launched, and they said that apparently – and it's not like they launched defective watches. Apparently, one of the suppliers that they were using to provide the haptic feedback feature, apparently they were having they couldn't produce it properly. But they had two suppliers for it. The problem is obviously that – you know, now supply is constrained because they're only down to one supplier. The other supplier started to ramp up his production because apparently he could figure out how to read the instructions and build it. They're doing that. But that's about the only slight negative. But reality is, in terms of earnings and sales, I mean, it's not that big a deal. It's not like, for example, they're launching the watch like now. The big season when Apple has their biggest sales is really the end of the year towards the holidays. We're not near there. You've got plenty of time between here and there. So if they're ramping up production towards having like a lot of people getting as Christmas presents Apple watches, I'm pretty sure it's going to be fine, which I'm pretty sure that a lot of people will be getting those. Based on a lot of the stuff that I've heard out there.
And by Christmas, we'll also be hearing about rumors about the Apple Watch 2.
Of course, yes. on the other hand, so Twitter, you know, had results. Yes,
Twitter. Moving on from Apple, Twitter.
The thing, well, what happened with Twitter, okay, apparently they subcontract NASDAQ to handle their the results, the release of their results, and they were actually interviewing Dick Costolo, who's the CEO of Twitter, on CNBC, and he talked about they asked him, so how did you find out that your results got released early by mistake? He said, listen, you know what? I was walking into a meeting. I was in the meeting, and I think it was his CFO or somebody else walked in the meeting, freaked out, and said, dude, our results just got posted early. It's like, what? That, you know, and it was a mistake on the part of the NASDAQ. The problem also was that the results, they weren't as good as people expected, so therefore the stock got hammered. They got hammered like in two ways. One, because of the early release and that, and it just made them not look all that competent. And I think a lot of people have been poo-pooing Twitter about their plan, how they're going to monetize, what they're going to do, what their strategy is. You know, their numbers haven't been great. You know, so there's a lot of pressure on them.
And look, this is another one of those situations that I occasionally sort of rail against. That, okay, growth forever isn't always, you know, realistic or possible or even something you should be striving for. It may be quite true that the right place for Twitter is, as you know, is not Facebook sized, but really is like one quarter of Facebook's size, but they deal with a specific kind of niche audience that they deal with in a different way that want that. And these contortions and backflips to figure out how to monetize and make more and grow more and keep growing exponentially and keep growing exponentially result oftentimes in you ending up destroying the product that was originally successful.
Right, because you're trying to make it so mass media, you know, let's mass everybody, mass, you know, whatever, you know? Yeah, I get that. Here's the thing. I think that they may have – one of the things about that is that you need to manage expectations, okay? And I think that's a problem that they have. I don't think that they've done a proper job of managing those expectations as part of the problem and what they're telling people that they're going to sell. And so people have all these expectations about where Twitter's going to be and what they're going to do and how they're going to monetize and so forth. And, you know, when they don't meet them, then they wind up with this. Now, let me ask a question. Do you think that there's all these rumors that Google would want to buy Twitter or anybody else, you know, Microsoft, all these other people. Do you think that somebody will buy Twitter? What's your thought? I mean, they bought Instagram, they bought Snapchat. I mean, you know, well, they tried to buy Snapchat. They couldn't. I think
Twitter being acquired is certainly within the realm of possibility. If someone thinks they can do better with Twitter than Twitter's doing independently, I certainly see that as a possibility. You know, the trick is, though, that, like we said, it's already becoming, if not obvious, it's becoming quite probable that Twitter's growth curve is going to level out at a lower level than people kind of hoped it would. Both in terms of active users and probably in terms of revenue, because it's hard to figure out exactly the best way to monetize this without, like, destroying it.
Destroying it, right.
Now, so,
on the other hand,
so people might just say, you know, let's just watch it for a while. Maybe it's too early to jump on it.
Now, on the other hand, there was another interesting earnings story on about a tech company, which has which I have always said is the company right now that, to me, this company has a bubble valuation, unlike a lot of others. This is crazy. Salesforce.com. Okay.
I haven't even read about this one.
Salesforce.com today, it started appearing that the CEO of Salesforce.com, and I will say maybe smartly, is saying that he's shopping it, that he wants to sell it. Okay. Now, Salesforce.com has $2 billion in revenue and it makes no profit whatsoever. Okay. All right. As a matter of fact, they lose money. If those of you who aren't aware, what Salesforce.com, Salesforce.com right now is one of the biggest companies right now in what's called CRM, which is customer relationship management. Basically, it's a software that companies use in order to track their sales teams and sales forces and do, you know, send out mailings to customers and manage those contacts and so forth and so on. It's a big business. It used to be dominated, or I still think, you know, I'm not going to say it's not – they're still not a big player, but it used to be dominated for the most part by Oracle. Okay, they had bought a company called Siebel years ago. Well, Salesforce.com came out, and they had a cloud product, and it's taken off, and a lot of big companies have adopted. I will say my company is using it. I know that a lot of other big companies, very, very large Fortune 500 companies, are using it as well. And so – but the thing is that their market cap is $50 billion. $50 billion. Their total revenue is $2 billion. And last year, they lost like about $400 or $500 million, if I remember correctly. And they're talking about that, oh, maybe Oracle, HP, all these other companies would want to acquire freaking Salesforce. And I'm like, fuck. Well, I mean, if what's his name is trying to pull the great big Steve Case, this may be it. Okay, all right. I mean, somebody's trying to – or Mark Cuban – this is it, man.
Try to get out at the top before the thing
falls. Hell yeah, dude. Listen, they were talking today. Oh, yeah, because it's going to command a huge premium. I'm like, wait a second. A premium? It's already at $50 billion, and they think – and they're talking about this thing getting a premium? I'm like, holy shit. I will say this. This is the most overvalued big cap stock, in my opinion, that there is. Bar any.
Do you have any disclosure to give? Are you shorting this thing or something?
I do not own this. Okay. I do not own the stock. I have not shorting it. Nothing whatsoever. I will say I like their product. I like their software. I am not going to. I do think it's a great product. This is has nothing to do with that. This is just a big valuation thing because, okay. Usual premium for a merger. It's like I just had, what, 30%. Shit, so you're talking about, on top of this, another 30%, so we're talking $65 billion? That's, I mean, look, I mean, that's, that would be about, I think about 25% of the market capitalization of Microsoft. And would you be willing, as a stockholder, to give up 25% of the worth of your company to buy a company with absolutely no profits whatsoever? I think you got to be insane. That's all I say. And by the way, there aren't that many stocks in the market right now with this crazy bubble valuation. This is the one that I have looked at for a long time that I don't understand why it's so crazy. Salesforce.com.
Okay. Any other tech earnings to mention, or should we wrap it all up? We're past time.
No, we're past time. I think that we covered a good chunk.
Okay, back after this with a lightning round. Okay, we are back. It is lightning round time. We're going to do alternating segments. I'm going to set the timer at 2 minutes this time because last time we did 1 minute segments and we still didn't cover anything in less than 4 minutes. So actually our average was 4 minutes or something like that. So anyway, Let's get started. I will go first this time. This first one will take less than 2 minutes, but I've intended to mention this for each of the last several shows and have forgotten. We have a new URL for the podcast. If you're interested, as well as our Facebook page, which we've been promoting, you can also get to us at curmudgeons-corner.com. Believe it or not, someone actually already had curmudgeonscorner.com without a hyphen.
Asshole.
I know. They're not actively doing anything with the site, but, you know, whatever. But they have it, and so we got it with a hyphen. So curmudgeons-corner.com. It'll basically just take you to myabelsmay.com blog, but filtered for only the podcast-related stuff. So new URL, bookmark it, do whatever, you know, just information for you. Okay, your turn, Yvonne.
Mark's feedback via Facebook Messenger.
Okay. And, you know, if you'd warned me, I would have had it up. But
I'm sorry you made me go lightning.
I don't have a word.
Oh, by the way, get the next feedback up while you're at it. Okay,
I already have the feedback. I see. I figured I would give the feedback. Anyway, Mark, without word for word, he had two basic points. And I'm doing this from memory, so forgive me, Mark, if I missed anything. One, we mentioned potential competitors to Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side. And he asked if we mentioned Chafee. Who has announced that he is probably thinking highly about running. He used to be a Republican. Now he's a Democrat, and he's thinking of running. And did we have any thoughts on him?
I have no thoughts on him. Basically, my thoughts are he's not winning the nomination. You're making a difference.
Chafee, I think, if he runs, it'll be a sideshow. I don't think he's going to be the one who becomes the one that everybody's paying attention to. Nobody's going to beat Hillary unless she self-destructs, right. which might happen. She may well self-destruct, or possible. One of these scandals could stick. Those things could happen. But unless that happens, none of these other people stand a chance. But I still think one of them is going to get out there who's going to have sort of a competing message that at least, you know, you hear people talking about him on TV and talking about what criticisms he's giving about Hillary or she is giving about Hillary. Right now, we'll probably mention him in a few minutes down the road. Bernie Sanders just jumped in. I think he's got a better shot at having that kind of impact than
maybe
Lincoln
they get
Chafee.
A guy with a name like Lamar. Didn't we, you know? Or actually, you know, actually, no, that's the opposite. What I said before was like when Lamar Alexander run for president, that there is never, ever going to be a president with the first name of Lamar.
Okay, we got the duck timer going off, but Mark had one other piece of feedback. He's the one who a number of weeks ago asked us to check out the podcast Serial, and he asked, have we done that yet?
I'm going to say no.
I have not done that either.
Sorry. I gotta tie a string around my finger to check that out.
Yes. I will say, however, what was it? I made a note to remember this just a few minutes ago, but I didn't remember it because I suck. What was it? Something. I'm just checking. There's another podcast that's only two episodes in that's talking about the same case as the Serial podcast did. But of course now I'm going to be unable to find it cause I suck. But anyway, and what's interesting, it seems to be financed by the people doing the defense to the guy who got convicted, which is interesting cause they just, and I'll try to look it up at some point and maybe I'll post it as a comment in the, when I post it on Facebook, I'll add a comment, saying what it was or something. I don't know. I'll insert it right here. Do, do, do. This is Sam from the future. The name of the podcast I was thinking of was Undisclosed, The State versus Adnan Syed. And as I said, as of when we recorded this, it had two episodes released so far. I listened to one of them within the last day or so. And anyway, it's, as I said, related to the same case as Serial was about. So it's another interesting thing to perhaps check out. Do, do, do.
Yes, there you go. All right.
Okay, at that spot, I've inserted the name of that podcast. You should check it out, too, Mark, if you're interested in that case. And that was Mark's feedback. So now it's my turn, and I'll hit the next feedback, which I'm not going to talk about here, but as I mentioned, we've got the ability to comment on Facebook when I post these things, and we did get a conversation with Jen reacting to what we said about data usage on our phones. I'm not going to repeat that conversation here. Go to our Facebook page. We're on Curmudgeon's Corner. Look at last week's episode, and you'll see that conversation, because she wondered what the hell I was doing that actually used that much data. But Jen, also outside of Facebook, sent me two additional things via email. So I do want to hit those. Number one, for those of us who don't know, what does Yvonne have against Carly Fiorina? The vitriol was amusingly palpable. Yvonne, do you want to give a one-minute summary without getting yourself in legal trouble?
I worked at HP since... 1997 to 2009, and I worked under her regime. And basically, Carly Fiorina was an incompetent, evil person. Okay, who basically did everything just to self-aggrandize her own ego, made very poor decisions, loved to blame other people for the fact that things didn't happen her way because she's an idiot and didn't understand how execution actually makes things successful. I literally despise her for destroying a culture of what used to be one of the ranked either as the best or one of the best companies in the world to work for, and destroyed the legacy of two great people, Mr. Hewlett and Mr. Packard, who worked to forge a great company to work at. And yes, I hate her living guts.
And this is why, in case you haven't noticed, or those of you who don't follow me on Twitter, practically every time there's an article talking about Carly Fiorina running for something, when she was running for Senate a couple years ago, now that you know she's talking about running for president, apparently she's going to officially announce her campaign in a few days. Almost every time I see one of these articles, I sort of poke Yvonne with it. And say, hey, Yvonne.
Let's say that the day she was fired, we drank champagne in celebration.
Anyway,
at a very nice restaurant in Coral Gables.
There you go. Jen's other comment, reacting to where I was talking about sort of liberal arts and the importance of liberal arts versus tech and STEM and all that. MIT tried to well-round us. She went to MIT. CMU didn't try to do that to my siblings. Apparently, her siblings went to CMU, where Yvonne and I both went. Personally, I think it was good, since I went to tech to marketing to whatever she's doing now. However, I don't think it's time to pull back on STEM yet, since the value of the liberal arts degree isn't nearly as high as the student loans required to obtain one. Although she kind of likes the STEAM stuff, which adds something else to the mix, I believe.
Be honest, the liberal arts degree has never, ever, ever been a good investment. It was always a good road to be unemployed and poor. Okay,
I wanted to correct the impression of what I was saying as well. I wasn't necessarily... I was saying that I think the liberal arts are somewhat undervalued. I think a lot of companies would do well for their business to hire more of those type of people because they bring a perspective that the pure techies don't have. However, part of what I was saying was also just the base, even if you are going to be an engineering student, having that liberal arts base is important for everybody. And I think if somebody's getting a computer science degree, they should still have sort of a core liberal arts education layered on top of.
I disagree with her about her shit. I mean, I know she went to MIT. That's great for you, but I'm sorry, giving shit to CMU about well-rounded. Well, maybe your brothers didn't like to go check out other stuff, but I'm sorry. Me, Sam, and my friends, we went, and by the way, we came out with a well-rounded education. If they only focused on their science stuff, that's their problem.
Well, I admit, at CMU, I did take a lot of philosophy classes. I took a lot of history classes.
I took a lot of
I came in having taken a lot of advanced placement credit, so I had a lot of extra room in my schedule to do those kinds of things, and I basically had a choice. I could have
no AP credit.
I could have graduated in three years. Instead of graduating in 3 years, I took a lot of extra electives, and I don't regret that decision one bit. The other thing I was going to say, though, is the flip side of this is also true. I think for non-science and engineering majors, the amount of science and mathematical and technical education that they get is severely lacking at all levels at this point. One of the biggest problems we have in this country right now is mathematical and scientific illiteracy.
But that was the great thing about at CMU. It didn't matter what you studied, you got that. And that is one of the reasons why people that even took liberal arts or other things came out very well-rounded by not just being a liberal arts person or a business person, as I was myself. You came out with a very rounded education in all those aspects. I had to program. I had to code. I had to do all of that. And I wouldn't understand a lot of stuff. Well, I was good with technology before, but I got far better at it because of that.
Yeah, and I think that's important, and not just at the college level. I mean, a lot of people, you know, and I recognize some people have an aptitude and some don't, as Alex is getting pulled away from me. Hi, bye, Alex. Knocking over tables. I recognize some people don't have the aptitude and aren't particularly good at sort of mathematics and things of those sort, but basic literacy in mathematical and specifically actually statistical concepts and sort of how science works and how you come up with critical thinking and figuring out things, I think that's absolutely critical skills in today's world. And every time I see people railing about, you know, how vaccines give you autism, or creationists, or any of this stuff, I slap my head and am like, you know, we are fundamentally failing as a society if, you know, people are going to go off on these things without any understanding of the science behind
science.
It.
Science, yeah.
And I'm not saying, you know, in the creationism case, it's not a faith versus science thing. They don't have to be mutually incompatible. You know,
That's right.
But, you know, you have to be able to recognize, you know, okay, let's look at the science. Right. Let's figure it out. Right. Let's understand.
We went past the quack.
Sorry. And, you know, climate change and stuff, too, fits into that category.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. Moving on. Your turn.
Jesus. Oh, God. White House. No. The White House anger translator. So
yes.
You didn't see that?
I saw that. Yes,
I watched
the whole White House Correspondents Dinner thing. I watched Obama's. Right. I did not for watch those, the comedians.
I did not watch the whole thing. But I will say
the that rest
I watched
of it was good too.
Okay, but for if you didn't watch the whole listen, if you just want to watch what many consider was the best clip was Obama went to speak and he brought what was his name? Gosh, I can't remember his name now. The guy that played the anger translator. Well, anyway, look, just look for Obama's anger translator clip where Obama is speaking and he's got this guy behind him who is acting like as a president talks very presidential, Obama does. And this guy is basically acting like the angry person that I would be if, you know, I were given a speech. And it was just. And then, you know, something like this.
Say hi to Yvonne, Alex. Say hi to Yvonne. Okay, that's enough. Bye, Alex.
Did I get poop on my feet?
So anyway, yes, it was quite hilarious. It was quite hilarious to get him doing that, and then Obama at some point goes off the rails. It was just funny. You guys got to watch it. There's always great clips from that dinner every year. That one was very good. I gotta give him credit for that.
Yes.
Anyway, all right. Okay. Your turn.
You made up for the last segment by being short.
Yes.
Okay, my turn. I actually didn't have this on the list before, but I remembered during it. There was a report this week of a test iPad stolen from a Cupertino home.
Yes, I heard about that.
Here's the thing. I don't care about the iPad. I just wanted to note the original CNBC report on this And apparently they have since edited it to change it. But it was like, you know, an iPad was stolen. And then it was like, we don't know what kind of model it was. It was apparently a test iPod, iPad, blah, 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 some things about it. And apparently there were some other electronics that may have been stolen. And it's possibly worth, you know, $7,500. And people are really concerned about the Apple product. And this went on for several paragraphs. And then it mentioned, oh, and a 20-year-old man was also kidnapped.
What?
Now,
well, they missed that part.
Well, after the fact, apparently it turns out the man was released after being driven about a mile by the captors. Okay. So he was okay. But okay. It was still like, I read this article the first time and I'm like, you know, one, two, three, four paragraphs about this iPad being stolen, another paragraph about random other technology being stolen, the value of the technology. And then like on the fifth paragraph, it's like, oh yeah, and a guy got kidnapped. It's like, really?
Wait, really? That's where you start? You start with a damn iPad? Forget it. Well, okay, look, the guy was only kidnapped for a mile and then released.
Yeah, I know, but I didn't even see that in the original report, but yeah, apparently that is what happened after the fact. But yeah, and I recognize, okay, look, this was CNBC where I was reading the article, and they have a certain audience who would care more about the stolen Apple iPad prototype than they would about the guy being kidnapped. But come on, guys, still.
Well, you know, look, come on. It is on. Okay, look. After you told me that the guy was released after a mile, it was really a non-story. Okay, that's
well, yeah, but here's the thing. I didn't see that in the original article. I saw that in a follow-up later, but.
Oh, maybe they didn't have that detail at first.
Well, right, but if they didn't have that detail, you got to assume the guy's been kidnapped.
Well, yeah, I guess. Yeah, sure. Anyway. Yeah, well, you know, we care more about the money. Fuck the kidnapping.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, your turn.
What is this thing about the...
Two more, and then we're done.
More on Apple photo bugs.
Okay, I wanted to talk about this, because I, you know, you mentioned a couple things that were driving you nuts about the Apple photo thing last week. I've used it a lot more this week, and I do have to agree, it is kind of buggy still. The desktop version has crashed on me multiple times. That also on the desktop version I've noted, and actually on the phone as well, one of the things that really is pissing me off is like sometimes when I move something from one folder to another, it takes a non-trivial amount of time for it to actually show up where you're going. So like, for instance, on the desktop version, a few different times I was making a new folder with some pictures, and it was a shared folder I had set up for my mom or whatever, and I'd move some pictures into it, and then I'd go to it and there'd be nothing there. And I'd be like, oh, maybe I did it wrong. And I would do it again, and I'd go to it and there's nothing there. Then I'd do it again and there's nothing there. And then all of a sudden there are three copies of the thing there.
You're son of a bitch.
Now, also, I've noticed on the iPhone version of this thing, you know, you'd mentioned that, you know, you'd go back to some stuff and it wasn't filled in with the thumbnails and the video was taking a long time.
Yeah.
I've noticed mine. If you go to the photos tab and scroll all the way down to the bottom, it'll tell you how many photos, videos, and you have. And if it's doing anything, it'll tell you what it's doing. For, you know, everything uploaded the first time just fine, but ever since then, it's still been doing stuff. It's like right now at this very second, it's preparing 22,365 items. For what? I don't know.
For what?
You know, it's got 69,000 photos on it. So, okay, maybe that's the rest of my photos, but it had them all earlier. So what's it doing now? And at one point I saw it saying that it was going to upload 40,000 pictures. And it's like, what? You're going to upload the pictures that you just downloaded? What the hell's going on here?
I don't know. This whole fucking thing is a clusterfuck. That's all I'm saying right now.
So
now,
I recognize this is a V1 version of their new Photos app.
I get it, but it's annoying.
But it was in public beta for 3 months. Come on now, guys.
Yeah, come on. What? And everybody only have like 10 fucking pictures? I mean, what the fuck?
Yeah, so anyway, I'm looking for... I'm hoping they come out with an update pretty soon. I mean, it worked fine. Like... I got done all the stuff I wanted to do with my photos. Works. There are a lot of things that are clearly much, much nicer than iPhoto was. Yes. No question. I would not go back to iPhoto. However, this is very rough around the edges.
It's annoying. It's annoying. It's annoying. It's annoying. Okay. So.
Okay. One more for you, and then we'll wrap up.
I picked the photos.
Oh, you picked the photos. So one more for me.
Yes.
Since I mentioned it earlier, Bernie Sanders is running for president. He announced in the last 24 hours. He is officially, he's an independent in the Senate from Vermont. He has at various times in the past called himself a socialist. He has announced he is running as a Democrat. You know, look, no one thinks he's got any shot at winning.
Come on, he doesn't really.
No. That's not the point at all. The point of having him here is that he wants to bring things into the discussion from the left of Hillary Clinton that Hillary Clinton might not be bringing up on her own.
Well, I totally agree. I mean, Hillary is not exactly on the left. And I mean, definitely if those issues are going to be raised, they're certainly not going to be raised by Hillary.
Right. That's and so what he's going to be doing, I mean, these kind of protest candidacies, and that is what this is, basically exist to try to raise the prominence of certain issues and viewpoints and get them into the discussion. So he'll probably be doing things like following Hillary Clinton around and going to the same places in Iowa and New Hampshire that she does and giving little speeches about, you know, well, what does Hillary say about this and why doesn't Hillary talk about that? And remember, Hillary voted for the Iraq War and look how that turned out, and basically try to get into a position where, I mean, ideally he'd love to get it so that she was responding to him and talking about these issues. If Hillary Clinton is smart, she probably will try her best not to do that. But the secondary goal is get those issues out there. So even if Hillary's not responding, at least the media is covering it a little bit and saying, okay, Hillary, 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 Hillary. Oh, by the way, Bernie Sanders said this.
Hey, but here's the thing. It also depends on how you bring up the subjects and how you approach them, for example. Because, look, you can probably get some traction, get some interest, and get some people interested, especially if you get enough people to vote for you and they want your endorsement. I'm sure that they'll probably take some consideration. Yeah, well, you know, we'll consider this, this, and that. So, you know, it depends how you handle it. You know, if you become a complete pariah and a bad guy, they'll tell you, screw you, you got nobody, I don't give a shit, who cares?
And here's the thing about Sanders, and we are wrapping this up. You know, I think of the people who have been talked about so far, I mean, we've got Bernie Webb out there, we've got O'Malley, we mentioned Lincoln Chafee earlier today. Of those names, I think he's the one that's most likely to stick through with his message. He's not a serious challenger to Hillary Clinton, but he'll be out there. He'll be a little bit of a thorn in her side. He'll be on TV. The question is just, you know, how much does the media decide to pay attention to him, or how much do they decide he's a joke early on and ignore him? He is a sitting senator, so it's not like a bunch of these yahoos who sometimes run. And, you know, he's called himself a socialist, but it's really a small s socialist. He doesn't go all the way out there to all the full socialist positions, and he's got a number of mainstream things in his portfolio as well. But it's an interesting contrast to Hillary. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And we still, you know, is he going to be the anti-Hillary candidate? I don't know. Of everybody who's out there so far, with the possible exception of Biden, who's still playing coy, he's looking like the closest to that we have. But I really thought we'd have somebody stronger than Bernie Sanders as an anti-Hillary by this point.
Yeah, I mean, this is like ridiculous.
I'm starting to get to the point where we're just not going to have one. I mean, you know, but we'll see.
Is it just a fait accompli and that's it? It's Hillary, that's it? We should just call it?
Again, unless she self-destructs or one of these scandals actually take her down, which, I mean, obviously the Republicans are going to be trying really, really hard up until the, you know, November 2016 to throw everything they possibly have at her, hoping something will stick and something will get the public actually being like, ooh, that's bad, you know?
Maybe she'll get blamed for the penis rocket or something. Anyway.
Oh, God. Anyway, that's a show. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. This has been another exciting episode of Curmudgeon's Corner. You can reach us on our Facebook page, Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook. Look it up. We have all the announcements of all the episodes. We can, if you have comments, questions, thoughts, please post on there. Post them as comments to the episodes, or just send us a message or whatever. We'd love to hear from you that way. If you prefer Twitter, I'm at Abelsmay. Yvonne is at I am Bo. I am also accessible by email, abelsmay@abelsmay.com. That's A-B-U-L-S-M-E, for anyone who really likes that method of talking. And that's a show.
That's a show.
Tell your friends, share us on Facebook, invite your friends to like our show. You know, we'd love to have your friends listen to us too. So if you enjoy everybody, the show, share. Tell everybody you know.
And we'll promise we'll be nice.
Yes, we promise we'll be nice. Indeed. And we're working on mediating the swearing. So not none, not too much, somewhere in between.
Right.
That's it. Hey, everybody, have a great week. We'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, Roscoe. We love you. Good dog. Good dog.